It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keeley Voltina in for Kate Archer-Kent. In 1918, the women's suffrage movement was gaining momentum in the U.S. It had just received the support of the president when a flu pandemic hit. The country was also in the final months of the worldwide conflict of the Great War. We're traveling back 100 years to examine the politics and the public health crisis. Share your perspective about the suffrage movement with us. Call 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about the factors that led to the 19th Amendment? What do you want to know about how that 1918 flu pandemic affected politics in the early 20th century? And what parallels do you see to now? Join us at 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Elaine Weiss is a journalist and a writer based in Baltimore. Her recent book is called The Woman's Hour, The Great Fight to Win the Vote. Elaine, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
We'll certainly get into the history of this stretch of time in 1918. As someone, though, who studies the suffrage movement, what lessons should we take from it? What resonates today, right now?
Well, these were millions. The movement was composed of millions of women across the country. In every town, in every city, there were suffragists. And they had been working for seven decades by this time to convince American men that they deserved the vote. They were half of the citizens of the nation, and they had no voice in their government. And this campaign, this crusade, had been going on for seven decades at this time. And finally, there was a federal amendment, a constitutional amendment in the Congress. It had been stalled there for 40 years. What we call the 19th Amendment had been introduced in Congress in 1878, and it had been stalled there. It was on the cusp of possibly being passed by Congress in the fall of 1918, and then the pandemic hits. And I think what we see are women being incredibly resourceful because they have to abide by the restrictions of the pandemic, which was very deadly. What we sometimes call the Spanish flu, but it isn't really didn't originate in Spain. It has no relationship in that way to Spain. But they have to deal with the restrictions. They cannot campaign. And what we see is enormous creativity and resourcefulness, and persistence. And those all mark, they are characteristics of the campaign from beginning to end. But you especially see that when you look at the documents of how they had to persevere during the pandemic, about year and a half, when it was coming through in waves across the country and, of course, across the world.
Yeah, well, because there was this vital and symbolic piece to this seven decades long effort, and those were marches and rallies where you saw people where women gathered, and that dramatically changed.
Oh, yes, it did. Marches, which were very controversial, by the way, it was not considered appropriate for women to be in the street publicly demanding something of their of their men and of the political powers that be. So marches were actually, at least at the beginning of the 20th century, when they really began taking off, were pretty controversial. And so the women had to be quite brave and thick-skinned because they were attacked. Sometimes they were physically attacked by angry men and boys. They were pelted with rotten eggs and vegetables. They were thrown off whatever they were riding. Sometimes it was a chariot. Sometimes it was a float. And they had to now switch gears because they could no longer have a rally or have a march or have a soapbox conversation. A woman would literally get up on a soapbox and address the men on the street, or she'd stand up on the hood of a automobile or in the back of a truck, and that couldn't happen anymore. And so they had to get their message across without their usual public relations apparatus. And that's where the creativity had to come in.
Writer Elaine Weiss is here as we discuss how the 1918 flu pandemic affected the suffrage movement and that campaign for the 19th Amendment 100 years ago. You can join this conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you plan to commemorate the passage of the 19th Amendment? Or maybe you're a teacher. Have you talked to your students or your children about this history? 800-642-1234. Elaine, you keep mentioning the word creativity. So how did these activists carry out their work and lobbying at a time when gathering was not safe to do?
Well, it's interesting. They found different ways. Not to say they were not restricted and limited and hampered by having to obey the rules of the pandemic restriction, but they understood how important this was. They did not want to endanger either their members or the general public. They were very careful about that. Their cause was important, but public health was more important. I think that's a good lesson for us today, too. But they tried to use other tools. They used the mail because they could mail literature to constituents. And I should explain that they were campaigning on many fronts. This is the fall of 1918, and the war, as you said, is winding down, but World War One is still in operation. The suffragists are trying to get Congress to pass the 19th Amendment. It's been stuck in Congress. The House has passed it, but the Senate refuses. So in the election year of 1918, they're looking to flip some senatorial seats and to get some senators in there who are more sympathetic to the amendment. So they are campaigning in several states. They have women campaigning against the incumbent anti-suffrage senator and for the challenger who might help them get it passed in the next Congress.
So not only are they campaigning for necessarily men who are up against people who are against the right to vote, but we have women attempting to be on the ballot.
Who are attempting to be on the ballot,
were they finding candidates that they could support then who would help champion their cause when they went to Congress? Were they male candidates?
Yes, there were quite a few male candidates who supported suffrage, and they were trying to get them in. There were women running for office too. At this point, Jeanette Rankin from Montana is in Congress, the mm-hmm. first woman to be elected. She's elected in 1917. She takes office in 1918.
And yet cannot vote. Right. Exactly.
Yes. Well, no, she can vote because Montana does allow women to vote. States could also decide to allow their women citizens to vote. So you do have about, in 1918, possibly 8 or 9 or 10 states where women can already vote. And this puts extra pressure on Congress, too. And the other thing they're campaigning for are there are 4 more states who are deciding through a popular referendum where, of course, only men could vote in these referenda. They are deciding whether to change their state constitutions to allow women.
Oh, how fascinating. On so many different fronts. We're not done with this conversation, Elaine. We're talking about how a pandemic affected women's quest to gain the right to vote and how that informs the world we're living in today. We've got writer Elaine Weiss with us. And you can join our conversation at 800-642-1234. What do you notice in this conversation about what happened 100 years ago and it compares today? Join us here on The Morning Show at 800-642-1234. You're listening to the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keeley Boltina. October 1918, weeks before a November midterm election, a flu pandemic spreading across the country. Suffragists in Illinois go ahead with an annual convention. Chairs are set 4 feet apart. The public isn't allowed to attend. A movement popularized by marches and rallies has to improvise because of a public health emergency, one that put women on the front lines. Sound familiar? We're talking about women's voting rights, a 1918 flu outbreak, and the public health crisis we have right now. So what strikes you about the similarities of these two times a century apart? What about the politics of the early 20th century and 2020? 1-800-642-1234 is the number to call. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. Elaine Weiss wrote a book on the suffrage movement in America and is here as we discuss what's similar and what's changed in 100 years. And Elaine, you talked about those midterm elections, suffragists trying to get those senators who didn't support a women's right to vote out of Congress, four states putting suffrage referenda on the ballot. When we didn't see as many marches or women in the streets, we still saw their posters, right? Talk about how women papered the trees.
Oh, yes. So they used a more, shall we say, paper-centric approach, because remember, there's, of course, no social media, but there's not even what we would call mass media, in that there's radio is not in use yet. And of course, television is decades away. So they have paper and they use it very effectively. Not only do they take out ads in newspapers to advertise their cause and send mail, as I explained, but they also, as one suffragist who was campaigning in Wyoming writes back to headquarters and says, the influenza epidemic was so bad, it was considered immoral for six women to meet in a parlor. And so she tramped the automobile roads. So she, you know, went all around and papered the trees with posters. And she also hung a 40-foot suffrage banner from a downtown bank building. So she got her message across visually. And that's the sort of way they had to be creative and improvise and campaign in ways that were had been supplemental before and now took center stage. Again, this was an important election. It was one where the nation was going to be making decisions about the direction of the country for the next period, and it was a very consequential election. They were deciding about immigration, about labor rights, about racial rights, and women wanted to be part of that conversation. They wanted to vote in the 2020 election, which was a presidential election, too. So they needed to get this amendment out of Congress and out to the states for ratification, and they needed to have a more favorable Senate to do that.
Yeah, that election in 1920. And I mean, I have to say, I can identify. I mean, we saw women working in all of these roles during World War I. They were contributing to society, and yet they didn't have representation. I mean, how did women's contributions during that war effort and fighting the flu pandemic really affect the case for suffrage?
Oh, it did. Because during what was called then the Great War, we call it World War I because there was a, of course, subsequent ones, during that war, women were volunteered to take on roles that women had really never been asked or never allowed to take on before. And we think of the nurses in who went overseas and the women, the female doctors who went overseas to treat the troops. And those are very, very famous and very important. But they're also, they took on roles, they became what were called farmerettes. They took on agricultural roles and ones that women had not usually done. And these were city women who had to be trained and go on to the land. They were train conductors. They were elevator operators. They're working in the factories. They're making bombs. They're making ammunition. They have taken over on the home front all of these very essential roles that were never assumed by women. And so the nation looks at this and said, you know, we couldn't have gotten through this war without the efforts of women. And then in the pandemic strikes right at the end, and soldiers are also very much affected because they're in these crowded camps, and women are nursing them and rehabilitating them. And the image of women stepping up, proving their patriotism, proving their citizenship, it becomes harder for Congress to say, well, no, women don't deserve the vote. Women aren't smart enough or strong enough emotionally to handle political questions, those arguments really begin to sound very silly. They were silly to begin with, but now there's no cover for them. And so this begins to change that last vestige of opposition. Not to say it eliminates it, because as we'll see in the ratification campaign in all the states, a lot of opposition arises again. We see that today. You know, we see women's issues being debated by men, and you certainly see some of the same arguments being used.
Writer and author Elaine Weiss takes us through the history of the American suffrage movement, and we're also talking about how World War I and the 1918 flu hindered and advanced the case for that 19th Amendment and the women's right to vote. You're listening to the Ideas Network here, and, you know, you just glanced at it, Elaine. What are some of the parallels you see today when we look at the politics of the suffrage movement in 1918 and what's going on right now?
Well, I think women are beginning to understand that now they do have the vote, they do have political power, and they need to exercise it. And I think that's becoming abundantly clear, if it wasn't already. And also that there are still obstacles to women claiming that power. I think 100 years hence from when the suffragists won the right to vote, they'd be surprised and disappointed that in state legislatures, there is an average of about 20%, 20 to 25% of the legislators are women. In Congress, it is also about 25%, and that's as high as we've ever been. There's more women in Congress, both the Senate and the House, than ever before, but that's still only about 25%. And of course, we have still not had a woman elected president, even one who won the popular vote. So I think there are still questions about American attitudes towards women being legislators, having the voice of making laws, not just voting for them. And I think it also brings up our responsibility to protect the vote today. I think there's a lot of parallels of state houses making decisions that make it harder to vote. And I think that is brings into question the whole idea of, are we a democratic nation? Do we want to be democratic? And I think that's an important question for us to ask as a nation.
What about how quickly we're able to pivot or change our minds? I mean, it feels like with social media, with so much regular media, with just the speed of life, that things are moving so fast right now. And yet we're talking about a movement that you said lasted seven decades. Are we in any better position to address social change now then? Or is that just kind of what it feels like, that it feels like it moves quickly, but really it takes a long time?
Yeah, well, the social media aspect, of course, has not really been tested. It is so new. We feel like things are moving faster. It's hard to know if it's just a lot of chatter. One of the things that I learned from studying the suffrage movement is that it was not just a political decision. It was the suffragists had to change hearts and minds over those decades. They had to convince men, and also women who were quite ambivalent about this at first, and some remained ambivalent, that women deserved to be part of the national conversation. They deserved to have a voice in the direction of the nation, in who represented them, in the issues they cared about. And I think that it was slow because they had to change not only the law, but first they had to change attitudes. They had to change attitudes towards what women's role in society should be. And they feared that women entering society, what they called the public sphere, as opposed to the domestic sphere, home, if a woman was aspired to be anything but a wife and mother, this was going to upset the American family. It was going to destroy it. And that was one of the arguments of the anti-suffragists. So I think what you saw was a slow and sometimes very painful adjustment of attitudes, having to change society's ideas about what a woman could and should do. What were her rights in society? What was her role in society? And so you, so it is a very slow process. I think we've seen things speed up a bit because the conversation can be accelerated, but I'm not sure minds are changed so rapidly. So yeah. I think that there may be the appearance of things changing, but on the other hand, it could really be that our instantaneous communication means that people are confronted with new ideas in a more rapid fashion. We saw that happen.
Elaine, thank you so much. Elaine Weiss is a journalist and a writer in Baltimore, and we've been talking about the women's suffrage movement. This is the Ideas Network, and you're listening to The Morning Show.